Leaving the exhausted Dyke behind, I turned my attention to the country on the opposite side of the fence. In the front of the vehicle, the officials had resumed their conversation where it left off before our brief break at the border post. They were talking about an operation that was planned for later that day. My interest was caught momentarily because I realized that the operation they were talking about had something to do with a high-stakes poacher interception on the opposite side of the park. However, I decided to push their conversation to the background in order to pay attention to the situation I was in at that moment. It seemed important to me personally, and I was determined to take everything in. The road snaked up and down in massive slithering waves along the borderline until it disappeared into the heat waves on the horizon. Judging distance in this terrain seemed futile to me. Mile upon mile stretched out in front of us. It must be exhausting for the rangers to walk here, I thought. The ground was covered in a deep and loose layer of thick sand. In combination with the heat, walking through this terrain surely calls for the most physically capable of individuals on both sides. For ranger and poacher, that environment is treacherous, not to mention the threat of being attacked by wild animals, as well as a human armed with an AK-47. A stone's throw away to the right was Mozambique. This fact still didn't completely compute in my mind. In Europe, where I lived for the last decade or so, borders seem more fluid given the nature of the European Union. The borders between African countries, however, always seemed so much more complicated to me. I associate African borders with complex histories, oppression, colonial rule, and tragic personal stories. Historically, this is of course also true for Europe, while today its border crossings are quickly becoming symbols of similar things. My gaze stayed focused on the land beyond the fence. There seemed to be no difference between my own country and the one I was looking at. Yet two flimsy fences told me that that piece of land, the one that appeared exactly like my own, was to be looked at with suspicion. The last time I was so close to the border was when I was still in kindergarten. I cannot remember it clearly, but the impressions I still carry with me are more intimidating than what I saw before me as we drove along the fence. Back in the 1980s, we were on our way home from the Kruger National Park when my father surprised us with an unexpected detour. "I want to show you something you've never seen before," my father told my brother and me. Naturally, we had no idea that we were anywhere near Mozambique. We were far too young. I was about 5 years old, while my bigger brother, my Buta, as I used to call him, was only 8. Without giving anything away, my father drove us all the way to the Lebombo border crossing. The world's end to our young minds. Theoretically, it was the same border as the one we were on now, only 600 kilometers or so further north. I recall seeing several uniformed men on both sides of the border, armed to the teeth as they towered above me. My father asked them if they would allow my brother and me to put our feet over the border so that we could be in two countries at the same time. Remarkably, they allowed it, and soon I found myself quite literally straddling two worlds. One I regarded as safe, and the other I only knew to be dangerous. It was bizarre, because although it shouldn't make a difference, I remember that one side of my body felt safer than the other. I felt intimidated by the weapons around me, and a little scared that something would happen to the part of me that wasn't in South Africa anymore. When we were back in our car on our way home to Pretoria, I felt exhilarated, as if I had flirted with danger and had laughed in its face. Silly, I know, but at that age, it was one of the most exciting things I've ever done. From that moment on, I would proudly tell people I'd already visited two countries in my young life, South Africa and Mozambique. Looking at the border as a grown-up, though, made me feel uncomfortable for a different reason. What type of world do we live in where a couple of meters this way or that way could completely change the fate of a person's life? People living in Mozambique beyond the fences undoubtedly had a much harder life than we on this side. As a child of five, bravely flirting with danger, I was already aware of how often people would venture into the Kruger National Park from Mozambique in search of a better life. Maybe it was exactly that slight awareness of the conditions in our neighbouring country that made me feel so nervous when I was a young child. All I heard back then was how dangerous Mozambique was and how illegal immigration threatened our way of life. Not much has changed since then, and xenophobia is still rampant. People still talk of Mozambique as the cause of all our problems, the poaching crisis rhetoric being no different. I remember seeing a report on the long-running television program called 50/50, soon after my first visit to the border. It shocked me to the core as they showed viewers the slightly blurred out image of a Mozambican man halfway devoured, presumably by a lion. The reporter informed us that this often happened to entire families with babies and little tots like me in their attempt to enter South Africa. Those images, paired with my impressions of the border, left a deep imprint on my young mind. And in many ways, it had shaped the way I regard the issue of illegal immigrants more generally. With the current refugee crisis in Europe, I think about those early impressions regularly. Not unlike the Syrians of today, Mozambicans from back then would venture into an unknown country. Predators could attack them at any moment, and still they chose to jump the fence into South Africa. Their lives in Mozambique must have been so terrible that they would rather cross the border with baby on back in the dead of night, not able to see what awaits them in the bush. Sometimes lions would kill them, and sometimes they would make it all the way to the mines in Johannesburg. In those days, the fence between the two countries was electrified with a lethal level of voltage. So often people were already electrocuted trying to get through. But now, after the demise of apartheid, none of the fences have any current running through them, which makes the policing of the border even more complicated. With this in mind, I shifted my gaze to the left side of the road, the South African side, the safe side. What met me there was a wall of dense shrubbery that no eye could penetrate. At that point, our convoy came to a halt. "We're here," the park manager informed us. I looked around but could see nothing. "The carcass is in the bush. We have to walk from here," the manager read my mind. "But first I want to show you where they came in." David and I got out and followed the manager to the fence.